As you know, as Father Jim reminded us, today the church celebrates the Feast of All Saints. And I was born and raised Catholic. Catholic grammar school, Catholic junior high, Catholic high school, Catholic college, Catholic graduate school. And so I think it is safe to say that I can make a commentary on Catholic things, and especially the saints. And when it comes to the saints, we Catholics are a strange lot. We have some really interesting traditions associated with the saints, and some of you may be familiar with these. For example, when something is lost, you pray to Saint Anthony, and you say some version of, "Tony, Tony, look around. Something's lost and can't be found." Now, somehow, Saint Anthony, wherever Saint Anthony is, will come help you retrieve the thing. Or when you sell your house, you bury a small statue of Saint Joseph in your backyard, upside down, with the face pointing towards the road. Allegedly, this gives Joseph some incentive to help sell your house so that he can get on the road himself. Now, the church also went wild, assigning patron saints to things, and I mean everything. So Saint Barbara is the patron saint of fireworks. Saint Charles Borromeo, the patron saint of dieting. Saint Drogo, the patron saint of unattractive people. And then people like Saint Polycarp of Smyrna, who is the patron saint against like bowel diseases and earaches. But other parts of the body are covered by other saints. And so if you want to like get throat healing, you would talk to Saint Blaise. Saint Servatius covers your feet. Saint John of God covers your heart. There are probably diagrams somewhere of which part is covered by which saint. And then Catholics developed this practice of collecting bits of saints' bones and teeth after they died, thankfully, and then putting them in cases and keeping them in special places because they had special power. Now, at one level, these cultural practices brought some comfort and folksiness to the faith, but at another level, I think they helped distort a vision of the saints that we desperately need to recover. Now, many of you know that my wife, Lynn, and I have two adult kids, Jonah and Kateri. They're twins, and they recently launched a podcast called Twinvestigation on SoundCloud. Very creative individuals. And so in each episode, they pick a topic and they explore it more deeply. And in a recent episode, they picked a Halloween All Saints theme, and they talked about the Celtic festival of Samhain. Now, Samhain is spelled S-A-M-H-A-I-N, but it's pronounced Samhain, and it means summer's end. Now, at its core, the celebration of Samhain ritualized the end of the harvest season and shortened days. But it also acknowledged what ancient peoples called thin days, when the visible and invisible worlds meet. Days when the world of the living and the world of the dead seemed very close to one another. Now, in many ways, the commercialization of Halloween has eclipsed the underlying richness of this time. Yet our church tradition tries to help us stay mindful of thin days and ancestors. Now, some of you may be familiar with the amazing pastor and theologian Nadia Boltz Weber, who I'll refer to a few times today, who says, "Apart from those who have fallen in combat, Americans tend to forget our ancestors. But in the church, we do the very odd thing of proclaiming that the dead are still part of us and are even an animating presence." At the health center where I work, there's an amazing young woman named Serena, who is an intern with me as a social worker. And besides just being an open soul and a wonderful human, Serena brings a different consciousness to the work that she does. Serena grew up in Zambia, in Africa, where they have strong traditions of speaking with and listening to ancestors. She rarely makes major decisions without consulting them somehow, and they are a vital part of her daily life and work. In fact, they are the reason that she became a social worker. They told her to become one. Now, in St. Paul, in his letter to the Hebrews, he tells us that we are surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. And if you talk to someone like Serena, you will be convinced that he was not speaking in metaphor. He meant that we have access to all those who have gone before us, and we can draw upon their lives and experiences to assist us. and they actually want to assist us. Now, I thought it's also probably not a coincidence that our modern era uses the term the cloud to describe the place where all data is stored. So, for example, my homily today is stored in the cloud. Now, I have no idea what that means or where it is, but I do know that I can access all kinds of information from anywhere in the world as long as I have the right connection. It's the same with the ancestors. We can access the information from anywhere, but we need the right connection. Now, we don't just wake up one day and say, okay, ancestors, talk to me. What should I do today? Come on. Like any relationship, this takes intentional effort. And especially if we haven't done much of it, it might feel a little weird to us sometimes. But with practice, we can become more in tune with how the cloud of witnesses moves and speaks. And when I say ancestors, I don't just mean our human ancestors. We have ancestors in the trees, the rivers, plants, and animals. And we are going to need to consult all of them if we're going to survive what we're going through right now. Now, one practice I have found very helpful to connect with the cloud is reading about the lives of the saints. So back in 1997, a man named Robert Ellsberg wrote a beautiful book called All Saints, which has really been inspiring for me. And he's written subsequent books since about the saints. And in this book, you get to read stories of people who are both recognized and unrecognized saints, people who are prophets and witnesses for our world. Many of them were just regular people, some who did extraordinary things, and some who were never famous. So during Lent of this past year, I tried to read a story every day, and I swear I felt like a better person for doing it because I felt their courage, their goodness, and their humanity jump off the page. Ellsberg reminds us that we are formed by what we admire. Let me say that one more time. We are formed by what we admire. And so taking in the examples of our ancestors in the faith forms us to be more like them. Yet I also look on my dresser every day, and I admire pictures of my grandparents, Regina and Wilfred Boucher, Charlie and Teresa Labadie. These were ordinary people who tried to love their families well, went through their share of difficult times, and tried to follow their calling. Regina, Wilfred, Charlie, and Teresa all encourage me, even in the face of hardship, because they passed on legacies of compassion, humor, generosity, simplicity, and gratitude. These are some of the saints in my life. Now, when I was growing up, the saints were a little more like superheroes with extraordinary powers that I could never achieve. You know, St. Francis and Superman were probably in the same category, and I could be Superman as much as I could, heal all kinds of people. It just wasn't going to happen. And the saints were seen as people to be idealized, but not imitated. Now, Dorothy Day, who is the founder of the Catholic Worker Movement, who ironically is in the process of being canonized a saint, said, "Don't call me a saint. I don't want to be dismissed that easily." She knew that once we put people in lofty categories, we can ease off on trying to become more like them. Now, at its core, the word saint means nothing more than one who is healed or made whole. Saints were not people who were perfect or better or holier than anyone. They just kept letting their lives be illuminated by God until God's light was all that you could see. Ellsberg says that none of them even really set out to be saints at all. They were just people who were trying to respond to the world around them in the ways that God was calling them with what they had in front of them. Nadia Boltz-Weber uses the term accidental saints to describe those of us who stumble into this grace, and she wrote an amazing book with that title. And she says that the words we hear today from Jesus, traditionally known as the Sermon on the Mount, are God's attempt to help us be saints. Now, considering who Jesus hung out with, I can imagine that as he looked out over the crowd who had gathered, he saw quite an average and ragtag group of people. These were people who didn't feel very special, people who had struggles, people who felt lonely, confused, forgotten, people on the margins. And I love what Father Jim says about saints and holy people. When you are in their presence, they don't show you how good they are, they show you how good you are. And I think this is what Jesus does today. He tells this group of people how good and blessed they are. In their mourning, and in their meekness, in their poverty of spirit, and in their hunger for justice. He tells them that God sees their beauty, even if the world can't. And Jesus knows that it is especially when we don't feel blessed that we need a blessing. And so he gives them one. Now, modern psychology tells us what Jesus knew a long time ago, that when we feel our own blessing, we're more likely to bless others. When we feel loved, we're more able to love others. When we feel healed, we are more able to heal others. Jesus starts with this small group and trusts that the circle will widen. In a now famous litany called Blessed Are the Agnostics, Nadia Boltz-Weaver adds a bunch of categories to the Beatitudes that we hear today and offers a new series of blessings that she imagines Jesus saying. And I'd encourage you, you could Google Blessed Are the Agnostics and check out the entire list or pick up her book, Accidental Saints. But here are just a few. Blessed are they who have loved enough to know what loss feels like. Blessed are they who can't fall apart because they have to keep it together for everyone else. Blessed are those who still aren't over it yet. Blessed are those who no one else notices. Blessed are the closeted. Blessed are the unemployed, the unimpressive, and the underrepresented. Blessed are those who never catch a break. Blessed are those who make terrible business decisions for the sake of people. Blessed are the burned out social workers, the overworked teachers, and the pro bono case takers. Blessed are the kids who step between the bullies and the weak. Now, it's no secret that many difficult days still lie ahead of us. You know, we had another fatal police shooting of a black man named Walter Wallace in Philadelphia this week. Political tensions are high as Election Day looms. Coronavirus cases are rising again, and there's just a lot of social unrest and anxiety. We are going to need the cloud of ancestors and witnesses like never before. And we will need to feel our own blessedness so that we can continue to address the pain around us. In the twin investigation episode that I mentioned earlier, my daughter Kateri tells the story of how we came to put lights in pumpkins at this time of year. Now, back in the day, after the communal celebration of Samhain, each household would take an ember from the communal fire. They would take it home in a carved-out turnip in order to light the fire of their own hearth for the winter months. Pumpkins might be a little easier to carve than turnips, and so the tradition started to evolve. And today, I think we are being invited to grab our turnips, take home some embers from the fire of our faith, light up your homes, and light up the world. Listen to the ancestors, and be the accidental saints that we are called to be.